97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Hans Olsen, Scott Girard. Good friend of the radio station. Good dude overall. Does a heck of a job over at KSLSports.com. Ben Anderson, Jazz beat writer, kind enough to join us. Ben, how are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing well. Doing really well. All right, so let's start with obviously this Spurs team coming in for game number two. Jazz won by 11 in a game that wasn't really even that close, but I think a lot of us anticipate a much different game coming up tonight. Would you expect this game to be a little bit tighter?
I don't know. I wonder if the Spurs don't match up very well at all with the Jazz, and that's why really none of the games have felt all that competitive. I know they made a little bit of a late push in the fourth quarter, but you know, the Jazz blew them out early in the season. It was kind of Boyan's first good game of the year, it felt like. And then they were just, you know, they were up 28 for most of the game in the second, third quarter on Monday night. I just wonder if they don't match up super well. And I don't know if it's a Rudy Gobert thing. I don't know if it's because they try and play in the mid-range, but not the same way that teams like the Phoenix Suns do, who kind of weave around screens to get there. They're a little bit more kind of downhill and pull up. And so it might not be any different. I'm kind of thinking we're at this point in the season where, you know, the adjustments are made, the teams are the teams, and if you're good, you're good, and if you're not, you're not. And San Antonio might not be very good, and that's why they find themselves in the 10th seed.
You know, I brought up the example of the Golden State Warriors and the Pelicans playing in a back-to-back right now. Golden State blows them out 123-108 one night, and then last night loses to them 108-103 because I think the Pelicans are on the press to try to see if they can sneak into that 10. Ben, do you feel like San Antonio has a press going on right now to hold on to the 10, and do you feel like they may feel that and play with a little more energy?
Maybe a little bit, and they're going to make adjustments, and you know, Greg Popovich is one of, if not the best coach in the NBA, so they'll come out and do some things differently and know what they did wrong. They're not as manic or kind of, you know, they don't have this kind of multiple personality that comes out game to game the way a team like the Pelicans have all season. You know, we've seen the Jazz play the Pelicans at, you know, a really high level where they came in and beat the Jazz. And we've seen them twice this year on back-to-back games where they couldn't figure out the Jazz either. So I'm not sure the Spurs have the other gear. And we know the Pelicans do because Zion Williamson on a night can be a superstar, and Brandon Ingram can be a superstar, and Eric Bledsoe can be really good, and Steven Adams can be good. The Spurs are just kind of the Spurs. And they've got some players that can certainly have better games. DeJounte Murray can play better. Keldon Johnson can play better. I just don't know if that's my expectation tonight. And I think the Jazz actually have done a nice job of getting much better without Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. They've really started to find themselves without their two all-star guards.
Ben Anderson joining us right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Do you feel like, look, obviously this team can't be overly competitive against upper echelon teams without Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell, but do you feel like this team's kind of figured out how to put a Band-Aid on trying to get by this next stretch of games without those two?
I think, and I'm going to ask Quinn Snyder about this tonight before the game, there's some been there going on with the Jazz right now, I think,
yeah,
where they realize, hey, you know, we know who we are, we know what our identity is, we know what our priority has to be in the playoffs, regardless of who you're going to play. The number one thing has to be health, and they've learned that a few times now. You remember a few years ago, they lost to the Houston Rockets, and they didn't have Ricky Rubio. Well, Ricky Rubio was their best perimeter defender, and that hurts when you're trying to stop James Harden and Chris Paul. And then they lost last year to the Denver Nuggets without Bojan Bogdanovic, and it wasn't like they overworked Bojan. He got surgery and had to miss the season, but if you're healthy, you're going to be really good, and the Jazz know if they're healthy and they're playing at Vivint Arena, they're going to be hard to beat, and I think that's all they really care about right now. And I'm sure there's advantageous seating. I'm sure they've looked at the scenarios. I'm sure they recognize how hard it is to dictate that still with six or seven games to play for most teams. But I do think they recognize, hey, we've been here. We know what we have to do. It doesn't have to be about trying to force things back or trying to fix problems this late in the season. Just get healthy. So, yeah, to your point, I think the identity exists. I think it took a couple of games to adjust without the two All-Stars. And then once they kind of realize, hey, you've got Rudy Gobert, you shoot the ball, you can give the ball to Boyan a bunch of times in a game, and he's happy to do it. I think that's going to work for the next five games.
Ben, I know you pay attention to the undercurrent and a lot of people talking. Do you have any thoughts or any ideas on any type of returns for either one of them?
I don't, honestly, other than, you know, what Mike Conley went on ESPN and said he was at 85%, and they just want to make sure he's at 100% and not forcing anything. But as he said himself, it's not as bad as anyone thinks it is. So that seems like a really good sign to me that they're being extra cautious and rightfully so. And hopefully they can get, you know, kind of a quick first round series and get a little bit more rest there as well. You also said if they need to give Donovan Mitchell a few extra games for his ankle, that's fine too. So it doesn't sound like there's any long-term concern to me, just reading the tea leaves off of what Mike Conley has said in that situation and seeing how Donovan Mitchell looks when he's walking around on the sidelines. I suspect they feel confident that they're going to get him back for the playoffs. Do they try and rush him back before that? I don't know. They're supposed to reevaluate Donovan Mitchell coming up on Friday or Saturday.
So I know this is a question that has been addressed by many people, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well. And I know the answer is not as cut and dry as sometimes we make it out to be, but are you willing to concede a seed for health going into the playoffs?
I think so. I mean, yes. If you're, you know, worried about Mike Conley re-injuring his hamstring and missing six games in the postseason, yeah, I mean, give up the first seed or the second seed or even fall to the third seed if you have to. Because the Jazz are good enough to beat any team in the NBA on the road in a playoff game. I think they're absolutely that good this year. They've got veterans, as we talked about. They've been there. That they know they've won big games. They've won at Houston when they were not a very good team. They won at Oklahoma City in big games when they needed to. They won against the Clippers on the road in big games when they needed to. So they've won playoff series games on the road. So I think they feel like they can confidently do that if they have to. The one thing they can't do is do it shorthanded or with one hand tied behind their back. So, yeah, if you have to sit Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley against the Nuggets on Friday, which is, you know, maybe your biggest potential opportunity to lose either the one seed or go from the two seed even down to the three seed, which I think is unlikely now, it's still probably worth it at that point.
All right, Ben, tough question here. I want you to rank these four teams in least wanting to see in postseason play, all right? Okay. The least wanting to see. Portland, Golden State, Memphis, and San Antonio. Currently the four teams that would be in the play-in tournament to finish 7-8 and the most likely four teams the Jazz are going to face. Who would most not want to see?
The Jazz are 8-1 against those teams, and the one team they've lost to is Golden State. And you remember that was that weird Sunday, I want to say it was daylight savings, and the Jazz had to play at like 11 a.m. It was just a super goofy game that they've lost a couple of those games this season. They've also won a few of them. But they've matched up really well with those teams. I think the team you least want to play still is Golden State because Steph is a superstar, and he's the only super, superstar of that group. And then you probably just go to the next best player, and I guess that's Damian Lillard, but they have had zero answer for the Jazz this season. In fact, their games have been less competitive against the Jazz than even Memphis has, and the Jazz swept Memphis 3-0. So I don't know if there's necessarily a great second option as far as, you know, someone you're afraid of. I guess I'll say Portland, though. And then I'd probably say Memphis just because I don't think they have enough playoff experience. And then I really think the Jazz, when healthy, are just a really bad matchup for the Spurs. But you know what? I think a lot of teams have thought that. The Spurs pushed Denver to a seven-game series a couple of years ago. Maybe Spurs, I should give them more credit. Maybe I should put Spurs as, you know, the second least team you'd want to see, and then Portland, and then Memphis. I think you'd be probably plenty happy to have Memphis in the first round.
You know, I want to touch on something you mentioned early on, and, you know, it just seems like the mid-range game is – you know, the dinosaur of the NBA as everybody's going a different direction. Is Pop's coaching to his talent with DeMar DeRozan and what his guys do well, or what's the philosophical reason why San Antonio is doing what they're doing?
It was goofy to only take 9 three-pointers in the first half the other night, and what, they didn't make one until the third quarter.
Yeah.
It felt a little stubborn to me, to be honest. I mean, it's sometimes, and look, Greg Popovich is stubborn. I think we know that. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, they're trying to prove a point today. We don't want to win games, and we're going to stick with the two. I actually think, you know, Ty Corbin tried to do that a little bit, and it didn't work, and it cost him his job. So I think Greg Popovich probably has a little bit of leeway to say, hey, we think we can do this. And there's a reason to do that. If you watch the Jazz-Suns games, the Jazz aren't beating the Suns from the three-point line. They're getting into that weird spot where the Houston Rockets got in the playoff series, which is, hey, Rudy's too far, you know, we're shooting too far out for Rudy Gobert to contest it, but we can get past the Jazz perimeter defense, which isn't fantastic. And I don't think that's a secret at this point. So I'm sure there was some strategy to that, but they also don't have tremendous, tremendous three-point shooters. And I also tweeted it, you know, Patty Mills had the worst game I think I've ever seen in his career because I didn't recognize he was playing. And Patty Mills is just one of those guys who always seems to have an impact on the floor because he's such a good basketball player. I just didn't notice him in that spot. So they need to shoot more threes. And maybe the Jazz just did a good job kind of scheming away from it, or maybe it was just an off night.
Ben, does Anderson Varejao make the Cavaliers a competitor this year?
I'm so surprised to see that he's coming back. Good for Anderson, him retiring with the Cavaliers. What a weird team to want to retire with and say that that's your legacy, especially for – where's he from, Brazil?
Yeah.
Like, I don't – he had some good years there, but, like, what a weird thing to say. You want your legacy to be you retired with the Cavaliers. Nobody cares about that.
That's strange. But no, that's not the question I wanted to ask. I was going to ask you about Denver. It's pretty incredible watching Denver just continue to win. I know they had a loss the other night, but watching Michael Porter Jr. kind of pick up where Murray left off, become a very solid scoring presence, and not that he wasn't, but, I mean, a much better scoring presence than he was, and watching Denver continue to win, do you feel like that Murray loss really does just put them out of the race, or do you think that they've found something that can kind of keep them up there?
I think it does. I think it puts them out of the race. I think they are really – and I'm curious about this with big guys in general, and maybe Joel Embiid's the exception. And look, maybe Jokic is too, and maybe I'm biased because, you know, last year Rudy really played Jokic to basically a standstill in the postseason. You look at their plus-minus, you know, I mean, the Jazz were just fine when Jokic was on the floor as long as Rudy was out there too. Like, those guys are going to negate each other in a playoff series. And maybe Jokic is just playing at such a high level this season. That won't be the case. But there is regular season success, and then there's postseason success. And I know it's so easy to say, oh, you've got Bogey or you've got Joe Ingles, you've got all these guys who can shoot really efficiently and you know, more efficiently than Donovan Mitchell can. And still in the playoffs, it comes down to in the fourth quarter, I need to give my guy the basketball and can he go get a bucket? And Michael Porter Jr. is not going to go create me a bucket. He'll catch an open three off of a Nikola Jokic shot and he'll look really good. But the Jazz didn't lose because Michael Porter Jr. was able to get open looks from three last season. It's because Jamal Murray would hit insane shots running off curls with the ball in his hand and throw up and get 50 twice, you know, and get 35 in another game. That's why the Jazz lost that series. You have to have that guy in the postseason. To go back to your question of who's the best player to add to the Jazz roster from, you know, from the past, it, as fun as it is to say Andre Kirilenko, whoever it is, baskets win. The number one goal in basketball is to score. So if you can add a scorer or a guy who can get his own shot to create a bucket late in the game, those guys are valuable. And that's why Donovan Mitchell still has an argument as the Jazz best player, even though Rudy Gobert is the most impactful, and why the Nuggets not having Jamal Murray is just going to be probably pretty crippling when they get to the postseason.
So when the Jazz get healthy, Trent Forrest isn't going to get many opportunities anymore, but what can he parlay this run into? Is there going to be opportunities for him, and what do you think those opportunities will look like?
I bet he's the Jazz fifth guard next season, and maybe the fourth, depending on what happens with Mike Conley. I think you really want to find a way to bring Mike Conley back, obviously, and I suspect you figure out a way to get it done. But there's a lot of money out there in free agency, and there's not a lot of players. So, you know, someone might offer Chris Paul a ton of money, and if he doesn't, you know, if he picks up his $44 million player option with Phoenix, maybe they just say, hey, we'll give Mike Conley that same deal, and that's going to be really hard for Mike to say no to and the Jazz to say yes to. But I think he has to come back as a fifth guard next year, and I think he's probably shown he brings more than what Mieone does, because and Mieone's had some nice moments defensively. I thought he played hard the other night against the Spurs. I know he's a little bit bigger, like 2 inches, but the ability to initiate an offense, to be able to break pressure in the backcourt, to be able to make some of those instinctual offensive plays that he does, and then be a, you know, he's got very promising defensive tools, and that's kind of how he got to the NBA out of Florida State. He's long. He's a little bit switchy. He moves his feet well. He already navigates screens better than probably anybody on the Jazz right now. I think he really has a chance. I mean, I think he really can do some things well that will give him an opportunity to get a guaranteed contract again next season. And look, if you do what you did with Jarrell Brantley and you just bring him back again next year on a two-way deal and he costs you $300,000, I mean, that's a steal because you probably aren't still relying on him when you've got Donovan and ideally Mike and you've got Jordan Clarkson coming back and you've got Joe Ingles. You probably don't need him, but he's a really nice piece to have that you continue to develop.
Given, and we're kind of putting you on the spot here. We had some fun with this a little bit yesterday for a moment, and Hans put it out on Twitter, and I'm kind of curious to get your thoughts on this. You're a Jazz historian. You've watched this team for a long time. If you, given the current, current play of the NBA and who the Jazz are right now, if you could go back and hop in the DeLorean and go 88 miles an hour and pick up a Jazz player from the Jazz past, not named John or Carl, and bring them and play with this Utah Jazz team, who would you go with? Because the majority of people, how many what would you say?
There's about 300 responses, probably 180 said, of those are AK.
Said AK.
And AK's game, I get why it feels like it fits the modern game, and it really kind of does. He's also a career 31% three-point shooter.
That was my thought.
Where are you going to put him? Like, is he taking Royce O'Neal's spot? I don't know if he's actually a better perimeter defender than Royce O'Neal is. Now, he's a much better shot blocker. He's a much better help side defender. You know who's a better help side defender than Andre Kirilenko is? Well, Rudy Gobert is, and then you have two guys in the front court who can't shoot, and you've killed the Jazz spacing. So I really do think you go back and look, Adrian Dantley, I get all of his work was done in the mid-range, but watch him. He goes and faces up from 25 feet and then dribbles in and hits a 16-footer. Well, who else does that? I mean, that's what Kevin Durant does. That's what Chris Paul is doing right now. That's what Devin Booker do. So, like, he's not exactly those guys, obviously, but he also scored 30 points a game on 56% effective field goal percentage. Okay, like, nobody does that. So you want to score, like I said, in the fourth quarter, in the playoffs, what matters? Do I have more guys who can get buckets than you can, especially like in an isolation situation? So Adrian Dantley's in the Hall of Fame for a reason. You would add another shooter like Pistol Pete if you could. Like, those guys can shoot and score 30 to 40 points a game. You love that. Jeff Hornacek could create a shot and spread the floor. Gordon Hayward's an insanely good basketball player. You know, maybe it's Gordon Hayward. I mean, maybe it's just as simple as, hey, that guy would come in, he would start over Royce O'Neal. You'd move Boyan to the four, and then you have another guy who can score 20 on any given night and really move the ball and pass as well. So AK's in the conversation. You're passing on two Hall of Famers for a guy who made one All-Star game and shoots 30% from three in his career. I don't know if I'm making that same decision.
I love it. That's why he's the best.
What does Brian Russell, does he play in anywhere for you?
He's the ninth guy on this roster.
There was about 50 Brian Russells.
I saw a few even Shannon Andersons in there, too. I was like, wait, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, there were a couple.
And you know what? It might be Darren Williams, in all honesty. I mean, Darren would be his big body and his ability to play in that backcourt would be pretty incredible in this year, in this era as well.
There were a couple people that said Mark Eaton. I'm like, how do you play Mark Eaton on the court with Rudy? That's going to be awkward. It's like, I've got this. No, I've got it. I've got this one.
You see the value of Arizona Ilyasova right now. The other Turkish gold would be great. Mehmet Okur, he'd be fantastic as well.
Well, Ben, we appreciate it, man. Great stuff. Great analysis. And, again, get to KSL Sports. You do a tremendous job over there. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, Ben.
See you guys.
Ben Anderson, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Go under Kirilenko. Who do you go with?
My thought would have been Adrian Dantley. I don't know if Hornacek.
Adrian Dantley's before my time.
Yeah. I mean, that guy was a scoring leader in the NBA one year. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Pistol Pete was before my time.
But. Yeah, Pistol Pete was. I mean, that's a guy who was scoring, you know, 30, I think in college, like 40 points a game without a three-point shot. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting debate for sure. All right, 11:24, Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Hans hanging out here at Cedar Hills Golf Club.
Yeah, it's the best, man. I love it. We got a cool breeze coming in through the door. The clubhouse is beautiful. It overlooks all of Alpine, all of Highland. It overlooks Utah Lake, and you can see across the lake over to Saratoga Springs and into Eagle Mountain. It's, you know, right backed up against American Fork Canyon, so you get that canyon breeze that comes down with the smell of the pines. You got the big horn sheep that hang out up on the mountain, so you're playing on this back nine, and you're going to see some big horn sheep, which is always – every time it, like, catches me off guard, like, what are the – oh, like, that's a actual wild big horn sheep. You just don't see those very often. And it throws you off. Have you seen one of those?
Yeah.
They're so compact, man. They're like little tanks.
Yeah. And you usually see a tree bird climbing out of a blind.
Who's hiking up the mountain with a bighorn sheep on his back? Why? I don't think you should be taking a bighorn sheep off of the Cedar Hills Golf Club, man. But the back nine's awesome, man, up on the side of the hill. And then they put prices out there for our show that you just can't beat, you can't ignore.
$12.80, it's the Zone Special. You come down here and you set up your tee time. All you have to do is call 801-796-1705. Set up your tee time Monday through Thursday mornings. You call the pro shop, and they will give you 9 holes of golf, plus the cost of a cart for just $12.80. But just call that number right now, 801-796-1705. Set up your tee time. or go to CedarHillsGolfUtah.com. By the way, we have the Jazz swag out.
Oh.
And so you want to you want to come by and grab a shirt, jersey, hat, whatever you want. Come by and grab something.
Jammies. We got Jazz logoed jammies. Those are Jazz logoed men's flannel jammies.
Yep.
All we ask is just keep it at one piece per person, but it's first come, first serve. Yep. You come grab anything off the table, it is free.
We're right here in the pro shop at Cedar Hills Golf Club, so come on down and hang out with us. It's that simple. All right, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
This is DJ and PK.
Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com, joining us. Utah visits on October 9th. BYU visits on November 27th. Is there any juice for those games?
Less so for the BYU game. I mean, they were pretty upset to lose that game going on the road. But, I mean, the Utah one, USC fans circle it all the time. I think if they played BYU more, you'd get a little bit more of that. There'll be some kind of revenge factor or whatever. But I think USC fans know that if you're going to win the South, it's got to go through Utah. And, you know, winning the division for 2 years in a row, I think that got a lot of Trojan fans' attention. So I think the Utah one is the one they always look forward to because they know it's really important as far as trying to win the Pac-12.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It's time to saddle up and talk about the winners and the losers. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, here's the good.
Good, the bad, the ugly, brought to you by Zero Res. Remember, get those carpets cleaned for just $33 per room. Some restrictions apply. Call 801-288-9376. But look, it's spring. You want to get your home ready, a little spring cleaning going on after all the dirt and muck and rain and nasty stuff throughout the winter. Let's get those carpets cleaned. 801-288-9376.
Scotty, I feel a little bit bad that we have failed to mention this in the first couple of days of the week. Mike Weir ended a 13-year winning drought by winning the Insperity Invitational on the PGA Tour Champions. And he did it in grand fashion. He had a couple of golfers that were on his heels. John Daly held a two-shot lead after he eagled the par 5 13th hole. But then Weir eagled the same hole just a couple minutes later, knotted things up at 10-under, and held on to win. And that's a local golfer. It's a local guy. We need to give him a little love.
Makes you feel a little strange to see that Mike Weir is on the senior tour.
I know. Huh?
By the way, did you see our good friend Michelle Money running out there?
I did. Yeah, and I'm happy that they're happy because we've had Michelle on this show a few times, and
yep,
she's a really, really cool individual. Really nice person.
And it was nice to see that. Picking up that title.
Love
and,
was in the air.
Yes, as Lloyd is correct. There was a lot of love in the air there.
Seniors tour.
How would you like, let's say you're playing golf and you win this tournament and Amanda runs out. Are you like crazy PDA or are
yes.
you just like, hey, look.
Oh, yes. No.
I got a lot of stuff to deal with here and interviews and stuff. So just kind of back away.
I'd look like a thirsty dog on a bowl of water. Like. It would be.
Like you're not going Goonies and saying, hey, this is my time.
It's like, hey.
This is my time up here.
No.
I know you're excited we get to remodel the kitchen, but just back away for a little bit.
No, man.
I haven't won in forever. Let me have this. This is mine.
But you know her. Like, she doesn't. I would have to run to her and be like, let's hug and kiss. I'd have to.
She's
set
like, don't,
it all
don't you
up.
Have some media obligations?
I would end up chasing her. She would run.
And I'd be like, be awkward.
That would be awkward.
I'd look like the guy from James Bond and
chasing his wife.
I'd look like a metal mouth from James Bond, and she'd look like Shooter McGavin running down the fairway. Oh,
Jaws.
Oh, that'd be funny. Like, hey, she's like, can I shake hands? Can we shake hands? No, get in here.
I would. I would love that, man. That would be pretty cool to win and.
Well, yeah, because you love.
Or you could have that, like,
do, bro.
That
I
really
do.
Dopey stage celebration that Phil Mickelson and his kids would always have. It's like, oh, come on.
Wow.
Those were dopey.
Wait, I don't remember these. What are you talking about?
Oh, you know, the kids would run out, and they're all wearing, like, matching clothes, and it's like, Daddy, we like, oh, geez. Come on. How many times did you practice that back at the house? Like, stop it.
Was it really fake like
that? It looks so fake, yes.
Lloyd, is he getting this right?
Yeah, Phil is. Well, I've always said that Phil seems like one of the faker people. Though I've started liking him a little bit more. He's always been pretty fake. It doesn't like seem as real.
Is he like the brother in Step Brothers?
Yes.
Adam Scott?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. That is him.
They're all harmonizing in the car on the way over. Somebody gets out of harmony, chews them out, kicks them out of the car.
Come on.
But then tells them to be at the 18th green.
If you're going to represent this family, you got to do it right. Oh, that's probably too hard on Phil.
I think we could all be hard on
Phil. Mr. Fig Jam.
He's had a good life, and I don't think he cares about us.
I think.
Though he's a fun follow on Twitter. If you're not following him, you should, because, like I said, I'm starting to like him more.
Huh?
I really am. I'm being serious. He's a really fun follow.
The one thing I'm going to miss until Tiger Woods gets healthy and gets back out on the course, the back and forth he and Phil had in some of those, especially the Peyton and Tom Brady one, was awesome. Like, I forgot about Peyton and Tom because it was all about Phil and Tiger taking pot shots.
Yeah. I'll agree. I like Phil a little bit more now.
Do you want me to mark that? Yeah, why don't you mark that with your U.S. Open trophy? Oh, wait. No, never mind.
But that's the whole thing. I fell more in love with Tiger than I did.
Oh, I know. Me too.
Tiger was
having none of it. Tiger, you know, one thing you learned about Tiger is that not only will he cut you up out on the course, he will cut you up with his words too.
Miss him. I wish he could have played in the Masters. Damn. Yeah.
I want, you know, I know that the PGA Tour is doing this thing where they're rewarding guys that are great on social media and stuff like that with extra money. I want a mic'd up, you know, final round of the Masters. Put a mic on a guy and let's hear what the conversations are like.
I'd love it.
I bet you're not far from that.
Well, you would bring more eyeballs. And, Lloyd, yeah. To your point, if it brings more eyeballs, then maybe you're not too far away from. But we have overheard quite a bit of Bryson DeChambeau's conversation, and some of it's unflattering.
Yeah.
And some of those golfers don't want those conversations out. Like, there's no way I would have let you mic me up during college or mic me up in professional football. In the NFL, fine, because I was a nobody in the NFL. The AFL, no way. Not letting you put a mic on me. There were things that were said that I would never want anybody other than the guy I was saying them to hear.
What if it comes with a significant financial incentive?
Well, maybe I could clean things up. It'd have to be significant.
Of course. I don't know. Having a mic on while you're trying to make a swing, having that whole thing set up on you, that doesn't sound like. I know they did it with you know, the Tiger and Phil thing or whatever, but it's just not – it doesn't feel – I wouldn't think it feels right to have a mic on you, carrying that big battery pack. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, maybe not, but let's look at it this way too.
Maybe you mic up the caddy.
How many guys on the tour would you be interested to have a mic on? Because I don't want a mic on John Rahm.
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know – thing is, I just don't know who these guys are. So I you know, there might be guys that we think are boring that are actually pretty funny, you know?
I don't know. Jordan Spieth. But maybe Bryson DeChambeau. Obviously, Bubba Watson gets a little loose.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind hearing Bubba.
Bubba's just cussing everybody.
Yeah.
All you're going to be getting is a lot of, overcooked it. That's a fried egg there. That's all you're going to get.
All right, there's your good. Let's get to the bad.
Now the bad.
Good, the bad, the ugly right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. The New York Jets had one of the more interesting moments of the draft, selecting two players with the name of Michael Carter, both on day three. New York's first selection was North Carolina running back Michael Carter in the fourth round, and then Duke's defensive back Michael Carter in the fifth round. So, you know, pretty crazy, right? Then New York selected Carter, the running back, a graphic that came up on TV profiling the player as a defensive back. And then they, you know, the Jets head coach, Robert Saleh, had to make sure that they turned in the right card. Said, when we took Michael Carter, the running back, ESPN threw up Michael Carter, the defensive back, on the screen. We're like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Check the notes, make sure we had the right pick. He said on a conference call, but lucky for us, Michael Carter, the player that was shown on the graphic, ended up falling to us, so we were able to scoop him up too. So, like I said, we're excited to have them both.
So, for just a minute, he had to look and make sure that he turned in the right card, thinking that they may have drafted the back instead of the running back.
How bad would that be?
Well, what's crazy is they ended up getting both the Michael Carters.
Yeah.
I don't understand exactly how that worked out, but it almost makes you wonder, did it put it in their mind when they saw Michael Carter the second, the defensive back, pop up on the screen? Or did they have it slotted that they would love to have had both of them? It makes you wonder. But I watched a little bit of film on this running back, this Michael Carter, and he's a baller.
Yeah.
I hope that he can help the Jets. Look, the Jets have become the storyline, whether it's this draft debacle or Zach Wilson or the movement that they made to get an offensive lineman, or like, everybody's paying attention to it. But like we said yesterday, until I see it pay off, I'm not going to believe it's
not interested. Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right. And finally, let's get to the ugly.
And of course, the ugly.
So, Scotty, we talked about this when it happened. Chris Weidman, who at one point held the belt in the UFC, was fighting Uriah Hall in it was UFC 261 in Jacksonville. This is just April 24th, so just a couple weeks ago. And you remember I came on that Monday, and my stomach was still turning because Chris Weidman threw a leg kick and hit with his shin across the upper part of Uriah Hall's knee, and it wrapped his leg around Uriah Hall's leg and broke it. Just a horrific break. Well, this is the first we've heard from Chris Weidman since going through surgery, and this is him talking about that horrific moment at UFC 261.
All I remember is hitting him with the shot, and the first thing that went through my mind was that was a super hard leg kick, and like he's not taking more than one or two of those. Like that had to have hurt him. And secondly, I looked up at his eyes and I saw him have like almost like a poker face on. I'm like, oh, bro, there's no more. You can't take any more of those. I know that had to have hurt. And then apparently I stepped back and that's must have been where I looked down and I got the visual of my leg flopping around. I don't remember stepping down, but I just remember seeing my leg, you know, rubbery and knowing what just happened. I hit the floor. I told Uriah Hall, I'm good. Like, don't hit me.
Yeah.
The second here, I put my head down and I just was, I just took a bunch of moments and I just was, first, I cannot believe that was my leg. There's no way that was my leg. Like, what the hell? And then I was like, okay, I'm dealing with some severe pain right now. I need to just calm down and just relax. And so I put my head down, I was relaxing, and then the chaos was beginning to mount around me with the doctors and Herb Dean and all that. And I'm, you know, they're right away, they're trying to like turn me over. I could hear them, you know, discussing between them and almost the uncertainty of the situation and the shock even on them. But I was still staying calm. I wasn't making noises and I was putting my head down. And Herb Dean at one point, he's like, you know, I guess probably looking down on me, my head was down, but, and he starts yelling out to them. He's out, he's unconscious. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm just trying to stay calm.
So that is, by the way, I wanted to play that because that might be the most descriptive take of a horrific injury that I've heard from an athlete.
Yeah.
Kind of walking you through moment by moment where his leg completely breaks in half. And, you know, you heard him talking about the physicians that knelt down and started to assess the situation. And you know that there's a bit of panic for them because if you got a major artery, if you got some real serious damage, they're instantly assessing life-threatening or potentially losing a leg. And in their mind, they're running through worst-case scenarios. So they're probably – now, they're trained to keep their panic inside. But you can see that hustle. Then Herb Dean's not helping. Herb Dean's the official, and he's yelling, he's out, he's gone. And he's like, no, I'm just
No.
I'm just trying
just
to
trying
catch
to be
my
cool
breath
here.
But I love that description from Chris Weidman taking us into the octagon when that leg broke. Horrible.
I like how, you know, horrible. He gets that shot. He's like, all right.
He thought he nailed him.
He's like, I got him.
He kicked him hard, and he heard the pop. You know, if you watch that thing live, it sounded like a 22 went off in that octagon. And so he probably thought, man, I just put a good shot on him. He might have thought he broke Hall's leg the way he kicked him. But what's weird is he didn't sense the pain until, you know, moments after that leg breaks and the bone comes through the meat.
Oh, man.
Yeah, compound fracture.
Yeah, yeah.
Horrible leg break.
All right, 11:47, Hans and Scotty here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Hey, if you want some jazz gear, we got it for you up here at Cedar Hills Golf Club, just right at the mouth of America Fork Canyon. You know where it's at. Come on by, hang out with us, and also take advantage of that 1280 promotion. You can play 9 holes for just $12.80 Monday through Thursday mornings. You just got to call the pro shop and set it up, 801-796-1705. That's 801-796-1705. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
The Big Show. The Big Show with Jake Scott and Gordon Monson.
Have you showed Lisa this story?
No.
Will you put the headset on her and show her that story?
Okay, now you be respectful while I'm gone, okay?
Okay.
Hey, fellas.
Gordon is back. Hi, Gordon.
Yeah, she's not here. I think she's on a walk or something.
Now, wait a minute. Did you eat something?
I grabbed a snack. On.
You didn't even go look for it.
I saw a couple of M&Ms, so I chucked them in my mouth, and then I went to the other side of the house to look for them.
You did not. You just went to the kitchen to grab a snack.
It's okay, isn't it?
Sure, they're waiting on air for me, but heck, I'm hungry.
Might as well, yeah, eat some
food.
I got a snack.
Catch the Big Show weekdays from 2 to 7, presented by Big O Tires, the team you trust, on 97.5, 1280 The Zone in the Zone Sports Network.
We've got the whole world in our hands.
You've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. We've got the whole world in our hands. You've got you and me, brother, in our hands. You've got you and me, sister, in our hands. You've got you and me.
It is time for another edition of Whole World News right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network.
Whole World News brought to you by Elite Works, 844-523-2777. Call them for your free website rebuild. Get that website working the right way, 844-523-2777. Or if you need a new build, they can do that for a discounted price. All right, Scotty, world record push-ups or a Madonna update?
Like the singer?
Yeah.
I haven't heard. I don't know what Madonna's up to these days.
So, Madonna is currently dating a 27-year-old. Just turned 27 yesterday.
Okay.
So they've been dating now for 2 years. So he was 20, about 24, 25,
and she was 72.
She is currently 62.
Oh, wow.
So you're not too far off.
That's...
Huh.
So he is 35 years her junior. So if we run the formula,
half plus 7, she's what, 62, you said?
Yeah.
So it's got to be 38.
That's the
cutoff.
Okay, so but that's the formula.
Yeah.
What is it? Half the age.
Half the age plus 7.
Plus 7?
Yeah.
So 38's the cutoff?
38 should be where she needs to be, yeah.
Well, this young man's 11 years under that. So,
hey, you know what? Would we even blink an eye if the roles are reversed?
No, I don't.
You know, I was reading about Alex Trebek. You know his wife was 24 years younger than him?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, if I had a 27-year-old daughter and she was dating a 62-year-old man, I'd be like, hey.
How rich is he?
What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And how fast is he going to be out of the picture? No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't.
But not really.
I wouldn't say. No, Scotty, so how about this? Lourdes is 24.
Who?
Who?
Lourdes.
Who's that? Who's
Madonna's
that?
Daughter, Lourdes.
That's her name, is Lourdes?
Yeah. You don't remember when Lourdes?
No, I don't remember.
You Whose
don't
remember daughter this? Is this?
Madonna's daughter, Lourdes. Everybody
is that
knows
the same
Lourdes.
As Lord? The singer?
The singer?
That's Lord A, and no.
Okay. You're on your own on this one. I've never heard of if Lourdes walked in the room right now, I would have no idea.
That's her oldest.
You talk
daughter.
To us like we're stupid for not knowing Lourdes.
What? I thought it was a pretty well known daughter and name.
Lourdes Leon.
Oh, wow, Lourdes looks a lot like Madonna, doesn't she? Just like her mom. 24 years old. But anyway, so that's what Madonna's up to. 27-year-old.
We should have gone with the push-ups.
Yeah, this is on you.
Sorry, Lloyd, that's my bad. We got some time. What's up with the push-ups?
So world record, Guinness World Record, amount of push-ups in an hour.
Okay. In an hour?
Yeah, 1 hour. The former record was 2,900 push-ups in 1 hour. This guy just hit 3,050 push-ups in 1 hour. He's
Holy
a former
smokes.
Navy SEAL. He's an absolute.
How many?
3,050 push-ups in 1 hour. That's the new Guinness Book of World Records number. And this was just set last week. And he's from North Carolina. Like I mentioned, he's a veteran. So listen to this, Scotty. There is a record for the most push-ups in a 12-hour period. So after Johnson got through hitting the 3,050 in an hour, he went for the 12-hour record. The 12-hour push-up record has stood for more than 30 years. At 19,325 push-ups. Johnson didn't quite get there. So he didn't break the 12-hour record. He just broke the 1-hour record.
So did you say he did the 1 hour and then he just rolled right in to try to do the 12-hour?
To 12 hours, yes.
Well, okay. you got to pace yourself a little bit there. So how many? 3,000? How many? In
3,050.
3,050. So he's around a push-up a second. I mean, there's 3,600 seconds in an hour.
So he's almost a push-up a second?
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Consecutive for an hour?
Jeez.
That sounds awful.
That's twice today, Johnny.
It is never. It's like Johnny's leg is a magnet and the mic cord is a piece of metal.
And it happens to all of us, but if you've ever
More
seen
so,
a remote,
Johnny.
We have these, you know, we have these headsets and they're connected to our broadcasting box here and they're corded mics. So sometimes if you sit down and you get up, your leg gets caught up in the cord and then you start walking and then you pull everything across the table.
And it's a terrible feeling.
And it's a terrible feeling. You feel really dumb.
Because it's expensive equipment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the headphones are like $400. You could buy a good used car at Larry H. Miller used car supermarket for what you get at this broadcast
box. Comics.
And so you get a little nervous, but so I'm always really paranoid about it. It still happens, but it happens to Johnny every single remote.
Every remote.
And today's, let's see, we're about 2 hours in. It's happened twice. And even I warned him the first time.
Yeah, and bad ones too. Like it full on trips him.
See if we can do this
ground.
Once an hour.
You know what we're also doing once an hour? We're giving away jazz tickets.
No.
You want to give away? In fact, I've got a family four pack. Let's give away right now.
That's a big one.
Four tickets to tonight's game. All you have to do is be caller number 12 right now, 855-424. So now I got the.
Did you almost give the Dish Pro Jeez. No, you can't. Ryan's going to be like, what?
It's like, wow, these phones are really burning up.
Blowing up now.
Hey, look, we're not looking for Dish or Direct. We're just looking for jazz tickets.
855-340-ZONE. That's 855-340-ZONE. You call right now, caller number 12, and you're going to get jazz tickets.
And all caller number 12 has to do is know Lloyd Cole's nickname from high school.
Wait, what? Did I have a nickname from high school?
I'm trying to think of what it was.
I don't know either. All caller 12 has to do is make a nickname up for Lloyd when he answers and says hello. You just tell him what his nickname is.
Well, it better be good or you're not going to win. So it better be cool.
Dang, I wish we could field those calls.
855-340-ZONE. 855-340-ZONE. Tim, I see your text. You're not funny. 855-340-ZONE. Coach Lacombe wants tickets. He just wants to know where they're at in the arena.
I've got to tell you, I had tears coming down my cheek. Coach Lacombe, when he sinks his teeth into something.
Oh, yeah, he's not letting go.
Oh, he doesn't let go.
855-340-ZONE. Coming up next, we'll hear from Jordan Clarkson on Shootaround. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone.